This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Doing a sound from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone. Now, the first phase of a three-phase Gaza ceasefire is over, and Palestinian resistance movement Hamas and the Israeli regime are supposed to be entering a second phase of that deal, which would bring us one step closer to a permanent ceasefire, the complete Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, and start of reconstruction, among other factors. Instead, the Zionist entity has made no effort to continue the ceasefire and has, in fact, closed all humanitarian assistance on over 2 million Palestinians. And one of the most vocal and active supporters of the Palestinian people, the people of Yemen, have quickly moved to give the Zionist entity 4 days to reopen humanitarian corridors for the entry of aid into Gaza, or they will initiate maritime operations against Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea. Yemen's Ansarullah movement has also vowed to restart military operations against the Zionist entity if it reneges on the ceasefire and resumes its campaign of genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. Yemen's ultimatum to the Zionists and U.S. war machine is a topic of today's Spotlight program. Now, a quick report.
The leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, Sayyid Abdel Malik al-Houthi, has issued a decisive ultimatum, giving Israel 4 days to lift the blockade on Gaza or face severe repercussions.
We announce to the whole world that we will give the mediators a deadline of 4 days. If humanitarian aid does not enter the Gaza Strip, we will resume our naval operations against the Israeli enemy. We will meet the blockade with a blockade.
In support of this announcement, hundreds of Yemenis took to the streets to celebrate, expressing solidarity with Palestine.
We came out in this blessed night on Ramadan to say that we support the declaration of our commander and that we will never retreat. We support all options, and we tell the Israeli enemy and its allies that the threats issued by our commander are not like the threats by Trump used only to measure what the reaction will be. Our threats are serious. You will see them manifest into action.
We spoke with a military expert to shed some light on how exactly the resumption of the blockade against Israel will look like in the days ahead.
Our government has warned previously that our naval operations are linked to the blockade on Gaza. If humanitarian aid is allowed to enter Gaza, our naval blockade will be lifted. But because the blockade on Gaza has returned, no doubt in the coming days our naval operations will resume if the mediators fail to find a solution to these violations of the ceasefire agreement.
As tensions rise, the region braces for the consequences of Israel's next move, which the Trump administration has made very clear it will support every step of the way.
The ongoing blockade on Gaza will compel Yemen to resume its naval blockade on Israeli shipments. Given the escalating situation in the region, many experts believe that the U.S. and Israel will launch a full-scale war on Yemen, a war that Yemen has been preparing for. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
And now for your guests. Join us, we have Mr. Hussein Abu Khaiti, activist and political commentator from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. And Mr. Saeb Shath, author and West Asia expert, joining us from Belfast. Gentlemen, hello, and I'd like to welcome you both to our Spotlight program here on Press TV. Hussein, we're going to start with you there in the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. Tell us what Abdul Malik al-Houthi, leader of Yemen's Ansarullah movement, has now vowed to do in 4 days' time. And we speak of Yemeni naval operations in the high seas. For our viewers that might not be privy to the over 15 months of support we saw from the Yemenis for Palestinians in Gaza, what do they consist of?
It was clear from the speech of Sayyid Abdul Malik yesterday that he's given the Zionist state of Israel and all the mediator, like the Qataris, the Egyptian, to have pressure on Israel to lift the blockade against Gaza. We know that Yemeni has stopped its operation, especially in the Red Sea, since they start to support the Palestinian people and to support the people in Gaza. They have started an operation in the Red Sea, which has begun to target Israeli-owned ships, and the second stage was actually to target Israeli-linked ship, but the third stage was to target Israeli port and as well to target any shipping company, even if it was not linked to Israel. But as long as any of its ships goes to any port of Israel, this means that that shipping company, it doesn't matter what country it belongs to, it will be blocked from entering the Red Sea or using the Red Sea. And we have seen that Yemeni have targeted hundreds of ships. They have sunk two ships, and they have targeted as well the United States Navy in the Red Sea, which have tried to prevent the Yemeni attack. And Yemeni demand was one demand and was clear: to stop the blockade against Gaza, to lift the blockade, to allow food and medicine to enter, and to have a ceasefire, and to stop killing Palestinian women and children, and to stop bombing Gaza. And this actually, when Israeli has accepted the truce between them and Hamas, Yemeni has immediately stopped order attack against Israel. But seems to be now that Israel, with the support from Trump administration, they are trying now not to go into the second stage of the truce, but they actually try now to extend the first stage and as well not to allow the humanitarian aid and food and medicine to enter Gaza. They want to use this humanitarian aid as a weapons, and they want to have pressure on the Palestinian people to release all the Zionist prisoners of war. And it's actually so silly that what you think that you couldn't get your prisoners by war. Do you think that this using the humanitarian aid will succeed and will force the Palestinian to release the prisoner. I don't think this will happen, and that's why Yemeni has sent a clear message that 4 days, and now it's now 72 hours till Yemeni will launch. I believe it will be different than before. It could be a full scale of attack, not only against Israeli-linked ship or own ship, but as well against any company that have any ties or have any ships that goes toward Israel. Maybe as well Yemeni could form a blockade against countries like the United States and UK and as well Germany in the Red Sea against all their battleship and as well against their commercial ship. And I believe that Yemeni could expand their attack to target Israeli port in the Mediterranean Sea. And I believe that this escalation, as Sayed Abdul Malik have said a few weeks ago, that any escalation from the Zionist state, this means that Yemeni will have a new and a different type of escalation. And I believe it will be a full scale of attack against the Zionist state of Israel, especially against their port in the Mediterranean Sea.
Thank you, Hussein, for your initial comments there. And Mr. Saeb Shah, thank you for your patience and welcome to our program here. Sir, now, this small resistance group out of Yemen, your initial thoughts on this big ultimatum it's making against the biggest, the Zionist U.S. war machine that we've seen, as well as the 15 months of support that it's given Palestinians throughout this onslaught and genocide in Gaza.
Hello to you and to your guests and your audience. Yemen now is at the forefront of the axis of resistance in support of Gaza after Hezbollah agreed to the ceasefire agreement in Lebanon. And the Yemenis are sending a clear message in here. Any additional American Zionist escalation, they say, against Gaza, it will reach the Yemeni shores and it will impact the global economy. It's this resistance movement in Yemen, it's proved itself. It can impact the whole international trade while it is impacting the genocide, I mean, going on in Gaza. And the Yemeni people were adhering to the Hague when the International Court of Justice found genocide plausible in Gaza. The Yemenis were adhering to what the Hague demanded from countries and non-state actors to do all what they can to stop this genocide. So the Yemeni message in here has become clearer every day since then. Either stop the Israeli aggression on Gaza or the world will face an economic crisis starting from the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb. There is over even 12% of the volume of global trade passes through the Strait of Bab el-Mandeb. Energy supplies, goods flowing to the worldwide, especially Europe, Asia, and USA. It all goes through the Bab el-Mandeb. Closing Bab el-Mandeb temporary even means skyrocketing prices for oil, gas, and even the shipping cost will rocket as well, since the ships have to tour around South Africa to go to Europe or anywhere. So this is will lead to unprecedented global wave of inflation at a moment which is the global economy itself is fragile. So the Yemeni forces in the Red Sea and the Bab el-Mandeb and even they were a great challenge proved to the U.S. Navy and its allies. So taking that in a short, if we a few days ago witnessed what the Yemeni done when they shot the MQ-9, that says alone the capabilities of Yemenis, not just in Bab el-Mandeb, as my colleague was saying, when they reached for over 15 months when they were engaging the Zionist entity, they reached the heart of the fortress of all securities in the Western world, is Tel Aviv. And they targeted sensitive targets in there. So Yemen is not a small player. It's proved itself hard against the American Navy in that region. And we saw the American aircraft pulling out of the area in front of the Yemeni forces.
Thank you, Mr. Shah there. And Hussein, I actually want to put Mr. Saib Shah's comments to you as far as the what he mentioned about the economic crisis in the Yemenis' capacity to inflict. Bloomberg, an economic news outlet, I don't know if you read the article, said the cost of transporting goods due to Yemeni anti-Israel operations on the high seas has pushed up the cost over the 15-month campaign of genocide of a container accessing the Red Sea route from an average of $1,660 a container to over $6,000 a container, Hussein. It seems Yemen, even having a so-called U.S.-UK coalition to protect Israeli-linked vessels, has been winning this campaign in the high seas, hasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly what has been since Yemeni have started its attack in the Red Sea to support the Palestinian and to form a blockade against Israel. This actually will affect and inflict the entire economy. And we know that most of the countries that will be affected by those type of attack is countries that's actually directly involved in the war with the Israeli regime, like United Kingdom, Germany, France, and other European countries. They are the one who actually kind of depend on the Red Sea. That's why Yemeni are sending clear message. We are not allowing our brother and sister, our children, to die in Gaza. Meanwhile, you are using the Red Sea to help the Israeli to reach all the goods toward Israel, and the United States as well using the Red Sea to form attacks as they did before against Yemen to support Israel. And as Trump said, he will support Israel with whatever it takes. But when Yemeni actually, they are supporting the Palestinian people to stop the genocide. They are supporting Yemenis against the Palestinian people against the war criminals, like the Minister of Defense of Israel, the former Minister of Defense, and as well their Prime Minister Netanyahu. He's a wanted man. He's a criminal on the run. That's why what Yemeni are doing actually is they are doing the right thing, and they will continue to do it. And what Israeli is doing, what the United States and other countries that support in Israel, they are trying to use humanitarian aid to have pressure on the Palestinian people. They want to set their prisoners of war free with those humanitarian aid. And I believe that Yemeni have as well now the upper hand. I think that they could act as well target any ship in the Persian Gulf. We know that the Israeli regime is avoiding to some somehow the blockade in the Red Sea by sending their ships toward the United Arab Emirates, and then those goods is transported through United Arab Emirates by trucks, and then through Saudi Arabia, through Jordan, and to Palestine. I believe that at one point, Yemeni will target those ships either in the Persian Gulf or if they docked in any port of the United Arab Emirates, because they are not allowing anyone to try to avoid the blockade. They are not allowing anyone to help the Israeli regime to continue its war against the Palestinian people.
Thanks, Hussein. And you know, Mr. Shah, you know, we don't really have to quote Bloomberg, do we? Because the proof is in the pudding. When we see the fact the U.S. and U.K. and a few of their friends have set up a coalition to protect Israeli-linked vessels, we see them attacking Yemeni soil, killing Yemenis, attacking Yemeni infrastructure. We know that the Yemeni operations are getting the Zionist attention, and significantly, rather.
Yes, indeed. And this was for over 15 months since we've seen the coalition, the United States of America, gathered in the Red Sea, was included many, many European players, and even supported by some Arabic reactionary regimes. Most of them left that coalition because they seen themselves, they couldn't face the Yemeni. And the Yemenis are not like the normal symmetrical war symmetrical layers the Americans or the Europeans facing. It's combined the asymmetrical and symmetrical warfare. So it's very hard for them to direct a precise kind of attack on the capabilities of the Yemenis. And most of the military strategic analysis, they said most of the attacks carried by the Zionist entity, which were done for show, to show big fires in Hodeidah or somewhere else, and the Americans, they didn't undermine the capabilities of the Yemenis. But the capability of the Yemenis people, the Yemenis armies, and the resistance in Yemen is there to control Bab al-Mandab, to affect the international trade, to make the international community even pay a price for allowing the genocide to continue in Gaza. Since why don't they just pay an attention when they see in Gaza the prices of food and fuel and medicine soaring, and the people are worried sick in case the bombardment return and the starvation return. So the Yemeni people are in touch with the situation in Gaza, and they want to show support and to deny anybody to inflict further pain and suffering on the Palestinian people. The Yemeni's position is very honorable, and the Yemeni's position is a manifestation of what the International Criminal Court and what the Court of Justice are requiring any players to do. And that's supposed to be saluted and beefed up by Arabic and Islamic states.
And I'm glad that Mr. Saad Hussein mentioned the Yemeni position here, because we also should speak about the Yemenis suspending their pro-Palestinian operations on the high seas with hitting occupied ports of Palestine, against hitting using hypersonic missiles to hit Tel Aviv, using drones to hit those occupied ports. They said with the ceasefire in Gaza, we will stop all these attacks in support of Palestinians, and they did. So did Iraqi resistance, so did Lebanese resistance with the welcoming of a ceasefire, as well as Palestinian resistance. The only serial violator of ceasefires here, to Mr. Schott's point, that's been dishonorable has been the Zionist entity.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that the Zionists, what they have done as an example with the truce with Lebanon. They keep continue targeting Lebanon on a daily basis. They keep breaking these truce. I mean, this is exactly what they actually want to prove. They want actually to succeed in what they have failed during war. They want to succeed during this type of truce. And as you mentioned, when Yemeni have launched hypersonic missiles against Israel and Israeli ports as well in occupied Palestine, they have launched as well those hypersonic missiles against American ships and UK ships and as well Israeli-linked ship. And as the United States and other countries have said, it's the first time in history that a country used anti-ship ballistic missiles. And I believe that when after the 72 hours that's left for the Israeli regime to allow food and medicine to enter Gaza, I believe that Yemeni could surprise the Zionist state of Israel with much faster hypersonic missiles. They could as well be surprised with some kind of cluster warhead that have several warheads to attack Israeli regime. That's why Yemeni actually, they always give peace a chance. But if Israeli think that they will continue their genocide, they should actually learn from what the Saudi-led coalition and aggression against Yemen. Since 2015, Yemeni has been under attack. Saudi has conducted almost 300 airstrikes against Yemen with the full support from the United States, from UK and other countries, and as well with the support from the Israeli regime itself when that war was launched against Yemen. But what was the result? In the state of Yemeni being under attack and under blockade, they are the one now who have the upper hand, and they will form a blockade in the Red Sea. And if it's necessary, at one point, they will form that blockade against any country that have any kind of relation with the Zionist state of Israel.
And let me put that, I'm glad you mentioned that, because I want to put that as my final question to Mr. Saeb Shah there. The UN has estimated between 2015 and 2022, over 377,000 Yemenis died, over 60% of them indirect causes of that Saudi-led campaign, like food insecurity, lack of accessible health services. Now, Yemenis endured a crippling siege, famine-like conditions, cholera and other diseases, mass displacement, you very well know. They're very justified to say, look, right now we cannot support our brothers in Gaza. We have to focus on our own reconstruction, our own rebuilding. But they have set this aside. Your final thoughts on what this says about the people of Yemen.
To start with, earlier this week, the U.S. President Donald Trump redesignated the Houthis as a terrorist organization. That is a message saying whatever being the United States of America with the Saudis' war of aggression on Yemen for the last over maybe from 2013 and beyond even that will continue. And the Yemen as a place have a genius geopolitical position. You see the maritime movement internationally controlled by Yemen. And the other thing, it's rich with its own resources. So the Saudis, the Emirates, and the United States of America, and the Zionists as well, all looking at Yemen as a piece which they can loot, a piece of property, as Trump thinking. They want to loot. They want to deny the Yemenis people to the ability to be able to extract its own wealth. We've seen the sanction the Saudis impose on any international oil companies who go for exploring in Yemen. And the same thing goes to United Arab Emirates, who tried to loot Yemen and tried to defragment Yemen and tell their people, we the only one who can provide wealth and safety for you. Look at your neighbor, Yemen. They are poor. Even they have some wealth in there, but mismanagement. This is the message they want to do, and they want to appear. But at the end of the day, the whole target of that, which the Yemenis leadership understand, it's the incubation of Yemen, which they're trying to fulfill, to put Yemen under the hegemony of the United States of America and the Zionist entity. Since we know the Emirates what try to do in Socotra's and in Aden port as well, bringing the Zionist entity over there. We know most of the forces who fought in Yemen, they were trained by the Zionist entity as well. Yemenis people are facing the Zionist entity before even the genocide in Gaza. It's all the plans and the design were there, deployed and advised and being counseled by the Zionist generals themselves. Saudi Arabia deployed so many generals and consultants of the Zionist entity. So it's one battle at the end of the day against Zionism and imperialism in the region.
Thank you both for joining us on the program. Stay safe to both of you, gentlemen. Mr. Hussein Al-Bukhaiti, there, activist and a political commentator, joining us from Sana'a. Mr. Saeb Shah, author and West Asia expert, joining us from Belfast. And this brings us to the end of your Spotlight program. Thank you for tuning in, and goodbye for now.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This for is a better life. For a better life.
Farmud Bo'istu.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
A certain man whose heart was as pure as Sa'di fell in love. Although taunted by his enemies in consequence, he showed no anger. Someone asked him, Hast thou no sense of shame? Art thou not sensible to these indignities? It is abject to expose oneself to ridicule and weak to endure patiently the scoffs of enemies. To overlook the errors of the ignorant is wrong, lest it be said that thou hast neither strength nor courage. How elegantly did the distracted lover make reply. His words are worthy to be written in letters of gold. Alone in my heart there dwelleth affection for my loved ones. Thus, it contains no rooms for staying enemies with people. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to all of you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of For a Better Life. This is Nahid, having the honor of hosting you on another episode. And what concept we are going to go through today regarding the great poem that we just recited from Sa'di Shirazi is staying kind with people, and specifically staying kind with the beloved ones. The concept of kindness, like making it even simpler, staying kind to our loved ones, like our family members, and encouraging the rise of affection and kindness between people, these features play important roles in our religion, Islam, as well. Like the Islamic basis of the concept of kindness in the family can be rooted in the verses that have mentioned He's creating love and mercy among you. Like, it is really nice that in the verse, Allah is saying that I am creating love and mercy between you. These features, I'm just inserting them between you because if you want to be my servants, if you want to be the people who claim to be believers, then you need to have those features within you. So the combination of kindness and desiring something between people as if like I am staying kind with the people around me, and at the same time I want them in my life. Like imagine the situation of like parents, like mothers and fathers. Of course, a child needs both of them. And when we just go to the roots of the Islamic context, we can see that this feature plays the role there as well. Like we have many verses in which the children are advised towards the good behavior towards their parents. And when somebody desires something or someone, he or she will create good imagination about the target and build affection towards that. This concept in the family means that his or her spouse is dreamy and lovely beyond the usual like romantic feelings. Mercy is the heartfelt compassion towards the emotional needs of others. Individuals at first understand the needs of other side, then their emotions are aroused, and finally they carry out the act of helping. According to Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, hearts are made to love those who do good to them and hate those who do evil to them. When it became dark at night, he saw a star and said, "This is my Lord." But when it disappeared, he said, "I do not love those who fade away." Humans do not like those who fade away. So the more one considers his or her family members or people around to be complete, the more his or her emotions are aroused. If members of a family only focus on defects, one cannot expect kindness between people. Imam Ali alayhi salam has called on men to behave gently with women. Women, like flowers, are delicate and men have power. Men are in need of their features and vice versa. So it's like the two halves, we need to be like completing each other's, not only talking about the case of husbands and wives. God speaks numerous times in the Holy Quran about the importance of maintaining family ties. He states, "Worship God and consider no one equal to Him. Be kind to your parents, relatives, the orphans, and destitute, your near and distant neighbors, your companions, the wayfarers. God doesn't love the proud and the boastful ones." So the Quranic verses offer us an important piece of advice to consistently cultivate kindship ties and strive to perfect them despite the challenges that we have to endure.
ارتباطتون رو با خدا قوی کنید. در مسائل دینی به نقاط عقلانی و ظریف.
Improve your connection with God. Pay attention to logical and detailed points in religious issues and learn them from great masters. There are sentiments in religion, but they rely on deep ideality and deep thought. This thought must be learned.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Welcome back to For a Better Life. For today, we are talking about the important ties between the family members and how important it is in the community of Muslims. So let's go for some bits of advice towards improving our relationship with the loved ones and see how can we pave our way and make our relationship even more beautiful and glorious. The first thing that we can mention is the concept of apologizing and accepting apologies. Like, okay, I do know that I need to be kind to people around me, but I'm living with them. And at the same time, we do have discussions, arguments, we have disagreements. So how can I stay kind in all situations? The first step can be apologizing and accepting their apologies. We should understand that when we have wronged someone, we should take responsibility and apologize for our behavior. We must put our egos to the side and admit our shortcomings. Also, when someone apologizes to us, we should accept their apology. The Holy Prophet is reported to have said, "Whoever receives an apology from his brother but refuses to accept it will not reach me on the day of judgment." So apologizing is no shame, is of no embarrassment if we simply apologize from the ones that we love. The other thing can be forgiveness and forgetting. Imam Ali alayhi salam is reported to have said, "Give mercy and you will receive mercy." Forgiving others cultivates a sense of humility within us. And though it may be challenging many times, it is a testament to our conviction and belief in God, as He has commanded us to be merciful to those around us, particularly our families. At the same time, sometimes forgiving others allows us to move past the challenges that we encountered in the midst of our relationships and can thereafter contribute to our mental and spiritual growth, of course. The other thing which we can just take advantage of to improve our relationships can be reconciling. When we see people who have been in similar conflicts, we should make it our responsibility to restore our relationship with their families. The Holy Prophet is reported to have said, "Reconciling between others is better than the acts of recommended prayer and fasting." So see how important it is that our great Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam is putting it beside fasting and praying, which are the obligatory features of a Muslim. We have it also numerously mentioned in Quran and in Ahadith that if you just try to make the brothers and sisters in Islam stay with each other or end the arguments between them, then here you can say that you are a true Muslim. So the role of kindness and understanding that we need to stay kind with the loved ones specifically and with the whole community of Muslims is something really important. It plays a crucial role. And what matters the most is that we should know how we can improve our relationships by striving to Allah, by asking Him for the guidance and advice for help, then accepting and apologizing, simple steps we can take towards a better relationship with the loved ones. Well, that was all for today's For Ibadah Life. I wish you great relationship and a great ocean of kindness with the Muslim community and, of course, with your loved ones. Until another episode, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there. Be there.
Yeah. قبلة إن إسلام الأقصى from peace goes hand in hand. This is a home. It is a right. Yes, Allah knows. It's our Palestine. Can you hear my cry? Can you feel my heart? One day the sun will rise over this land. حبك في قلبي سامحني يا أقصى عيناك تبكي فإني هنا أدعو إلهي احميها يا رب فهي في قلبي يا أقصى حبك
The Zionist regime's current assault is the longest in the occupied West Bank in more than two decades, and it is the largest operation of forcible displacement there since 1967. Hundreds of homes have become uninhabitable, while vast stretches of roads have been dug up with bulldozers, both in the refugee camps as well as in the cities themselves, affecting all aspects of life for residents. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, "Feces and urine, these are just some of the things that the Zionist regime troops left behind in Palestinian homes during their 11-day assault on the Al-Fara refugee camp in the foothills of the Jordan Valley, south of Tubas, in the northern occupied West Bank last month. Fida Abu Zainal's home was one of them. Abu Zainal, 46, his wife, and three children were forced out at gunpoint on February 2nd, the first day of the assault. Given their home's location at the entrance to the camp, theirs was first case of expulsion. Using his home as a military outpost, soldiers lived, slept, and ate in Abu Zainal's house for 11 days, during which they vandalized it behind recognition, leaving a stench of urine and feces on the floors and in the closets." Abu Zainal, a former welder, told the Electronic Intifada from his bare living room, which he had to empty all of the furniture that had been ruined by soldiers, said, "I lost my mind when I saw the inside of my home for the first time after they withdrew. It's a garbage dump. It's uninhabitable. There is no home anymore. They told us we had 5 minutes to grab our belongings and leave, and to come back a month later," Abu Zainal said, adding, "The soldiers tried to force us to leave the camp, but I refused. I told them they can bomb my house and me along with it. In the end, they let me go to my father's house in another part of the camp." The trashing of his home was not the only horror that Abu Zainal has had to endure over the past month. In September 2024, his son Majed, 16, was executed by soldiers in the street as he pleaded for his life. Soldiers then mutilated the boy's body with an armored bulldozer and paraded him around the camp, documented in a widely shared video. on a dresser in another room of his home, a ripped-up Quran sits below a mirror upon which vandalized photographs of Majid are hung. The Zionist regime's military assault on the Al-Faro refugee camp came as part of a wider ongoing attack on cities and refugee camps in the northern occupied West Bank. This began in Jenin refugee camp on January 21st, 2 days after the ceasefire in the Gaza Strip came into effect, pausing 16 months of genocide. At least 60 Palestinians have been killed and dozens more wounded across the northern West Bank since the start of the operation. Some 40,000 Palestinians have been forced from their homes, with the Jenin, Tul Karm and Nur Shams refugee camps almost completely emptied. The Zionist regime's current assault is the longest in the occupied West Bank in more than 2 decades, and it is the largest operation of forcible displacement there since 1967. Hundreds of homes have become uninhabitable, while vast stretches of roads have been dug up with bulldozers, both in the refugee camps as well as in the cities themselves, affecting all aspects of life for residents. Omar Abu al-Hassan, head of the Farah Refugee Camp's Popular Committee, which tends to residents' needs, in the absence of a formal administrative authority, told the Electronic Intifada that Israeli forces used the majority of the camp's homes and the surrounding buildings as military outposts and expelled their residents. Abu al-Hassan managed to remain inside the camp with about half the camp's residents during the assault. When he emerged following the troop withdrawal, he was extremely shocked, he said. There is no excuse whatsoever for all this destruction. There was no use for the larger number of soldiers that were deployed in the camp. Many of them had nothing to do except vandalize, raid homes and harass people, he said. He estimated that the Israeli regime military had caused more than $250,000 in damages, including to the central road, which was torn up by bulldozers, and to water, sewage, electricity and telecommunications networks. About an hour's drive west of Tubas lies the city of Tul Karm, home to two large Palestinian refugee camps, the Tul Karm camp and Nur Shams. The camps are populated by those who were forcibly displaced from their homes and lands in the coastal cities of Jaffa, Haifa and Kezara in 1948 and their descendants. Kezara is only a half hour's drive away from Tul Karm. Neither Jaffa nor Haifa are that much farther, yet it's original residents still living in these camps are not allowed to visit, let alone return. On a crisp winter morning in February, small crowds, including elderly men and children, gathered on top of a high hill to gaze out at the Nur Shams refugee camp in Tul Karm. This has become a daily practice for many since they were forced out of their homes in the camp starting in late January. Qais Tawfiq Khalife, a father of four, said, "I come here every single day, from morning till sunset. I only leave to pray and have lunch. I do not have a single piece of information about what happened to my house. The entire neighborhood has been emptied. I just stare at it from here." He continued, pointing to his home in the distance. "It's the yellow house behind the mosque, next to the pink house." This isn't the first or second time that Khalife has been forced to leave his home. On December 19th, soldiers demolished part of his home during a raid. He said, "To this day, the back portion of my house is destroyed, is covered with canopies." Khalife said, "This time, however, the invasion was different. This is the longest we've experienced. We are not accustomed to being out of our homes for this long. Like Khalife, Rafat al-Banna 36 has not seen his home since the start of the invasion. Amid piles of rubble and pools of sewage water, al-Banna stood on the outskirts of the Tulkarm refugee camp trying to assess the damage. He said, "The only thing I know about my home is that the foundations have been destroyed. I have a storage unit under my house, which soldiers raided and destroyed. The house is without pillars and may fall at any moment. Any move and it will come falling down." He explained that occupation troops forced him and his family out at a gunpoint on the first day of Tulkarm's invasion. He said, "They besieged the camp before raiding the neighborhoods, forcing people out and searching the homes. They entered my house, vandalized it, and gave us 10 to 15 minutes to get our belongings and leave. We had to leave. We were not given a choice." The Zionist regime has said it will keep its army stationed in the cities and camps of the northern occupied West Bank for the coming year. Faisal Salameh, the city's deputy governor, told the Electronic Intifada that the Palestinian Authority has no information on whether or not the army may withdraw before that. He explained that PA security forces, including police, have not been allowed to operate due to the presence of the Israeli regime military in the streets since the start of the ongoing assault. Salameh said, "In reality, Israel has reinvaded and imposed direct military occupation on the cities of Tulkarm and Jenin. They are imposing facts on the ground, imposing a policy of coexistence with the presence of the military without any resistance. In other words, they are saying these areas are under our sovereignty." Thank you.